On this 16th day of May 2011, Nisunga Chaturdashi, in San Diego, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 18, the residents of Jambudweep offer prayers. And we're reading text 8. This is Prahlad Maharaj offering a prayer to Lord Nrisimhadev. So I'll just chant a few words at a time. Om Namo.
Om Namo
Bhagavate
Narasimhaya
Namas
Tejas
Tejase
Avir
Bhava
Vajranaka
Vajradangstra
Karmashayan
Randhaya
Randaya
Tamo
Tamo
Grasa
Om Swaha
Abhayam
Atmani
Buhishta
Om
Shraum. Okay, I'll just read the translation. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Lord Nrisimhadev, the source of all power. O my Lord, who possess nails and teeth just like thunderbolts, kindly vanquish our demon-like desires for food of activity in this material world. Please appear in our hearts and drive away our ignorance, so that by your mercy we may become fearless in the struggle for existence in this material world. Purport. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 4.22.39, Sanat Kumara speaks the following words to Maharaj Prithu. Yatpada pankaja palasa vilasa bhaktya karmashayam gatita mudgata yanti santaha tadvanda rikta matayo yatayopi ruddha sroto ganasta madanam vajabasu devam. Devotees always engaged in the service of the toes of the Lord's lotus feet can very easily become free from the hard-knotted desires for fruitive activities. Because this is very difficult, the non-devotees, the jnanis, and the yogis cannot stop the waves of sense gratification, although they try to do so. Therefore, you are advised to engage in the devotional service of Krishna, the son of Vasudev. Every living being within this material world has a strong desire to enjoy matter to his fullest satisfaction. For this purpose, the conditioned soul must accept one body after another, and thus his strongly fixed fruit of desires continue. One cannot stop the repetition of birth and death without being completely desireless. Therefore, Srila Rupa Goswami describes pure bhakti or devotional service as follows. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma janavartam anukulena krishna anushilanam bhaktaruttama. One should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably and without desire for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. This is called pure devotional service. Close quote. Unless one is completely freed of all material desires, which are caused by the dense darkness of ignorance, one cannot fully engage in the devotional service of the Lord. Therefore, we should always offer our prayers to Lord Nrisimhadev, who killed Aranyakashipu, the personification of material desire. Aranya means gold, and Kashipu means a soft cushion or bed. Materialistic persons always desire to make the body comfortable, and for this they require huge amounts of gold. Thus, Aranyakashipu was the perfect representative of materialistic life. He was therefore the cause of great disturbance to the topmost devotee, Prahlad Maharaj, until Lord Nrisimhadev killed him. Any devotee aspiring to be free of material desires should offer his respectful prayers to Lord Nrisimhadev, as Prahlad Maharaj did in this verse. Om Jnana Timarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmidatam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master Srila Prabhupada opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Prabhupada. So life in this material world is characterized by these famous four things. Ahara Nidhyam Bhayamaitunancha. Ahara is eating, neither is sleeping, bhaya is fearing, and maitunya is sex, life. Of these four, the one that trumps all the others when present is bhaya. If you're afraid for your life, there's no question of eating, sleeping, or mating. You're either running or fighting. And you'll see in the material world that fear more or less really controls so many people's activities. Even if it's just like the generalized fear of poverty. Poverty is a major fear, right? This is a hard struggle for existence. And it's all against all. And everyone's competing for scarce resources. And when you live in this world a little bit of time, you can see how frail, how delicate or temporary wealth can be, material security. And so therefore there's kind of a default. You know, everybody, you know, when you grow up and you're through with your, like, carefree, hopefully, you know, carefree childhood time, then it comes time to get down to business. You know, of course, there's usually a family involved, and then you have to make money and so forth like that. And in the course of just living your life with that fear, there's so many other fears. Disease, there's fear of the threefold miseries, you know, which more or less, like, there's this huge flooding going on. You know, if it's not one thing of another, it's a tornado, it's a flooding, it's a tsunami. You know, just that's just one kind of misery called the adi-daivic miseries. But they're unpredictable. You know, and therefore you have this insurance business. Insurance simply means to try to allay your fears, right? They try to scare you. Oh, if you die, who'll take care of your kid? You know, if your house burns down, what'll happen? Fire insurance, car insurance. You know, if you hit someone hits you. Okay, bye. So much insurance. It's trying to allay that for health insurance. So this is a world of fear because it's the world of death. Death is the ultimate frightening thing. Now, Lord Nrisimhadev is an incarnation who specifically is meant to bring fearlessness to the devotees, you see, and to protect against the fear. But, and Krishna in general, you know, part of the process of surrender is to have full faith in the Lord's protection and maintenance. Protection in the ordinary sense, protecting your safety, and maintenance, protect you from the fear of poverty, of not having enough of one thing or another. And so the Vedic literature also deals with that. I was just reading chapter 9 of the Bhagavad Gita. There are so many rituals, there are so many practices. The organization of Varnashram Dharma, it's, you know, organizing society in such a way so that you can live peacefully and prosperously, you know, peace and prosperity. And there's a whole part of the Bhagavad Gita that has to do with offering ritualistic prayers to the demigods and performing sacrifices so you'll have a better life, either in the heavenly planets or in this life or somehow or other. The Karma Kanda section of the Vedas, right? That's there. But Krishna, he condemns that. He condemns that in the ninth chapter and the seventh chapter, different parts of the Gita. And he says that those who, they may worship me in, kind of indirectly by these Vedic rituals and hymns, desiring to go to the heavenly planets, right? And then they may enjoy like anything there due to these pious credits. But then, chine punne mati lokam vishanti, eventually they have to come down again. So all you get is this coming and going. They come down again to this world of death. Marjalokam Vishanti, which is the greatest fear. So you don't really get free. You just think that you're free for some time. You're allaying. And then again comes this, you're back in this world again. So then he says something very interesting. He says, Ananyaschanti yantomam yajanapayupasati tesham nityabhyuktanam yogakshema bahamyaham. That if, but on the other hand, if someone worships me, with undeviating mind, Ananyaschanti yantomam, Tesham, always linked to me, I preserve what they have and what they lack and give what they have. I preserve what they have and preserve what they lack. What he gives is yoga and kshema. Yoga means the things you need to live, and kshema means your security, your welfare in general. You know, Krishna will provide it. Now, having that faith is part of what surrender is all about. Now, Prahlad Maharaj, he had this ideal faith. Right, he was completely surrendered to Krishna, and he's the emblem of remembrance. Of the nine processes, Prahlad is the the perfect remember. In other words, absorbed in, you know, in Krishna. Which means that he's completely leaving up to Krishna his welfare and his safety. And we know the story, how his father became so angry because he was unwilling to renounce his faith and what he knew to be true, the Krishna consciousness. He was the original one who spoke truth to power. You know, it takes a lot of guts to do that. In America, they have this thing with whistleblowers. You know, supposedly they're supposed to be protected. But, you know, there's always the question whether they're going to be crushed, you know. Whistleblower is someone who says, wait a minute, right? Tobacco is very bad for your health, and these guys are criminals. They're putting more nicotine in there. You know, the whole weight of the establishment, the elite, comes down on you because you're threatening their money, their power. So Prahlad, he knew the truth, and he was unwilling to bend. And time after time, his father would question him, and he would simply preach to him Krishna consciousness. Basically say, Father, give up your demoniac ways and surrender unto Vishnu. It's the last thing that Hiranyakashipu wanted to hear. By nature, he was the personification of the Asuric mentality. So nicely described in chapter 16. They say there is no God in control. Right? That there's no absolute. That they're perfect, powerful, and happy. And that they're the possessors. And the very idea of a controller superior to them is anathema. It's like kicking a snake. So finally, Hiranyakashipu. Now, Prahlad, he tried to kill him in so many ways, right? After he found him to be incorrigible. Now, when did it come? You know, if you study the history, it's interesting that when Prahlad himself was, they were thinking that he was, you know, stubborn. That was one thing. He kept sending him back to the teachers, Chandanamarga, to straighten him out. But they couldn't, of course. But when it really got to be a danger was when he was preaching to his classmates. He was spreading this poison of Krishna consciousness among his classmates. You know, and basically he was saying, if you study his teachings, they start out very basic that, you know, sense gratification is bad because it takes you away from the ultimate goal of life. And he, you know, and he describes it like that to his friends, and they're listening with rapt attention. You know, they're being converted, and they are converted. So this was like subversion of the whole demonic kingdom. Because any culture, you know, depends on transferring the ideals and the principles to the next generation. So Hiranyakashipu, he was the original demon, he had his own ideas, you know, and he wanted that to be propagated. Prahlad was standing in his way. And now he really, really had to be taken care of. So that's when they put in, you know, kill him, boil him in oil, you know, crush him, every other way you could think of. But he was protected. He was protected and maintained. And ultimately, but you know, Krishna's witnessing this, and ultimately his fury at his devotee being tormented was personified in the person of Lord Nrisimhadev. So Lord Nrisimhadev, he has this dual function, and when you think about it, they're related very closely. Because that he kills Hiranyakashipu, he kills the demon, right, and liberates Prahlad from danger, and liberates the whole universe, really, from this meningitis, you know, of Hiranyakashipu. But at the same time, he can kill or destroy the demon within us, because we all have that propensity for unlimited enjoyment, for forgetting about Krishna and trying to enjoy, thinking we're the proprietors. And so that also needs to be killed. And that's why he's known, he's worshipped by the Gaudiya Vaishnav, because he destroys the obstacles. The obstacles are all in here. The obstacles are in our heart. The obstacles to progress in devotional service. And that's why I love this prayer. The repetition is important. When you see repetition in Sanskrit, it's emphasis or high emotion. You know, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama Eva Kevalam. Kalo nasteva, nasteva, nasteva gataranyata. Very famous verse. Favorite verse for devotees to memorize because it's repetition. It's easy to remember. So, Harinam, Harinam. So he's emphasizing there's no other way. This is the way. Chanting of the holy name of Hari, Krishna. And then nasteva, nasteva means there is no other way in this age of Kali. So this is, you know, serious. teaching. So here you have repetition by way of high emotion, you know, of real supplication here. So look and see all the repetition. Namas Tejas Tejase. The first repetition is Tejas Tejase. It means that you're the most powerful of all, you know, your power covers all other power. There's another nice verse about to Lord Nrisimhadeva, a prayer in the, I think it's part of the Nrisimha, the Narayan Kavacha. The Narayan Kavacha also goes through different avatars and offers prayer to them. I think it's in the Bhagavatam. So it says, Vidikshu Dikshu Urdvam Ataksamanda Anda Bahir Bhagavan Narasingha Prahapaya Loka Bayam Swanena Sotejasa Grasta Samasta Teja. So what he's saying there, you know, you're everywhere. Just like we see Ito Nrisimha, Padato Nrisimha, you're everywhere inside of me and outside. Every morning we sing like that, right? So then we sing, here he's saying the same thing. He says, Vidikshu Dikshu Urdvam means in every direction and up and down. You know, I'm seeing Nrisimhadeva. Antar Bahir, within and without. Bhagavan Narasingha, there is the Supreme Personality of God at Lord Nrisimhadeva. Prahabayal Lokabayam Sonena. With your loud roaring sound, you know, you're destroying the fear of the pious. Completely destroying it. Prahapayam means destroy, totally taking away. Lokabayam, the fear of the world, the pious in the world. Lokabayam Swanena. Swatejasa, again, Grasta Samasta Teja. Your Tejasa, your power, is covering everyone else's power. So Grasta Samasta Teja. In other words, you're all powerful. So this is important. If we're going to look for someone for ultimate relief from fear, we want them to be the most powerful, right? If they're the most powerful and then they're on our side, then we're safe. To someone more powerful, then you're not safe. So there's a Tejas, Tejas, Avir, Avir, Bhava. Please be manifest, please be manifest. Where? In my heart. And with your Vajra Naka, Vajra Dangstra. Now this is nice. Naka means nails, and Dangstra means teeth, or I guess maybe fangs in this case. So he's got, and Vajra is a thunderbolt. So they're unstoppable. You can't, you know, they're invincible. That was the whole idea. These wonderfully powerful and sharp nails, you know. No demon's body could. Now remember, Hiranyakashipu came out of that anthill, you know, he performed these austerities with a body as hard as a thunderbolt. Right? He was young and he had been empowered by his austerity. But they couldn't withstand those nails of Nrisimha. So similarly, our material desires, karmashaya. Karmashaya, this word asha comes up again and again, means your aspirations, your hopes, your ardent desires for food of things. You know? There's so many. They keep being planted more and more every day. Unlimited desires. Read the 16th chapter. It's all laid out there, you know. Aneka hopes, unlimited. But here, Lord Nrisimhadeva is more powerful. He can tear them to pieces. So karmashaya, then randaya, randaya, tamo. So randaya means eliminate, eliminate. Please, please, eliminate. What? Tama. What's tama mean? Tama.
Ignorance.
Yeah, that's good. Okay. Darkness. Darkness. Darkness of ignorance. And then, grasa, grasa. Drive away. Oh no, okay, I'm sorry. The randaya randaya goes with the karmashyan. So with your thunderbolt like teeth and thunderbolt like nails, please destroy, vanquish my hopes for material things. Karmashyan. And tamo grasa grasa. Eliminate, wipe away the darkness in my heart, the darkness of ignorance. So these things are all connected. If we cultivate the mode of ignorance, then we're sure to cultivate more and more material desires. You know. And the and then he says Om Swaha. This is like oblations, all glories to you. Then in that the last part Abhayam Abhayam, he's repeating again and again. Please fearlessness. Atmani Bhuhishta, please appear in my heart and bring Atmani in my mind and bring fearlessness, O my Lord. And the Nrisimhadeva, who he offers obeisance to at the beginning. Kshraum. Now this syllable crown, every deity has its own seed of bija syllable. Just like for Krishna on the altar, kleem, and for Radharani, shreem. You see? And for Nisringadeva, I forget some of the others, they all have, and some of them, you know, om is also one. But for Nisringadeva, it's kshraun. It's wonderful because you can hear he's ripping apart kshraun. You know, kshraun. K-S with a dot under it, A, K-S-R-A-U-N. Kshraun. So that's his bija mantra. And this, you came late, but this is the one in the purport. Prabhupada says, any devotee aspiring to be free of material desire should offer his respectful prayers to Nisringadeva as Prahlad Maharaj did in this verse. So this is a favorite verse. We have a beautiful Nisringa Shila here. You can offer the prayers. So it's very effective. Now in the purport, Prabhupada, he first quotes this very nice verse from the teachings of the Kumaras to Maharaj Prithu. This is in the previous canto, in the fourth canto. And Prabhupada quotes this verse quite often. Because the whole idea is that the only thing preventing us from experiencing our real original nature as a pure love for Krishna is the material desires. They are like the perverted pure love for Krishna is turned into this attachment for things material. So how to overcome them? Those are like knots. It said that we have the unlimited knots that are tying us to this world. They're knots in the heart or in the mind. You know, ideas of enjoyment. You know, and there's also the flip side, lamentation. You know, oh, I once enjoyed, now I can't enjoy anymore. So that lamentation will take you to another body, or maybe I'll enjoy my next body. You know what I mean? So these knots, they keep you bound here. So they have to be cut. And this is a prayer for the Nisringadeva to cut them. But really, for devotees, the other way that we overcome these knots is through the pleasure of Krishna consciousness. You see, they become sublimated. Like, you know, you have a certain amount of desire in your heart, and it goes out through the senses, through these varieties of sense gratification. But those same senses and that same enjoying spirit can be turned into bhakti. Because there's a great pleasure in bhakti. You know, that's the whole Vishyavanivartante Nidaharasid Rasavajam Rasopyasa Padamdishranavartate. That you're meant to renounce the objects of senses, Vishaya, sense gratification. But even though you may do that for some time, the taste remains deep in your heart. And when, again, the chance comes, or, you know, it rises up, you know. So you have to uproot that taste. You have to purify that. So Param Drishtanabhartate, when you experience directly the Param, Krishna, the Supreme, then you don't return. He overwhelms all of that. That's why he's called Madana Mohan. Madana, he enchants the mind, enchants the heart, you know, and the lower desires are destroyed. So that's what this verse is about. Yat Parap, I love this line, because Prabhupada, I heard him chanting again and again. You know, he's kind of relishing these ideas. Yat Pada Pankaja Palasya Vilasa Bhaktya Karmasya Yamkutita Mudgutta Yanti Santa. The Santas are the saints. We're sitting here in San Diego. It's the same word. Santa Fe, right? Same word in Sanskrit and English. The Santas. So the saints, the devotees, notice the word Karmasya, that also appears in exactly the same way in the verse of Prahlad's prayers here. So, para pankata palasya vilasa bhaktya. This one hyphenated word. So, bhaktya means by bhakti, there's a certain vilas. There's a certain spiritual pleasure that comes when serving literally the toes of the lotus feet of the Lord. Because if you have pankaja, this is a lotus, and the palash are the petals. So if you have the feet are the lotus feet, then the petals of the feet are the toes. You get it? So by serving those toes, by serving those lotus feet, there's a pleasure that comes, which karmashayam kvatitam udgvatayanti. The knots, which consist of these karmashaya, hopes and desires materially, are udgvatayanti. They're untied or they're cut for the devotees. However, on the other hand, Tadvan narittamatayo yatayo pirudhasrodogana. That for those who are opposed to bhakti, namely the karmis and the jnanis and the yogis, You know, there's four types of people in the world. The karmis is the vast majority. Those who are simply food of actors, they have no idea that they're even supposed to try for liberation. It's just more or less animal life. But there's many human beings who are like that. I was one of them. So those are called the karmis. Then you have the gyanis who understand liberation, but they don't. They're averse to bhakti. You know, they're confused that everything that has a form, every human form is the source of misery. They don't understand there's such a thing as spiritual form. So they aspire for the impersonal liberation, which is not secure. So they cannot ultimately stop the waves, srotoganas, of material desire in the heart. The karmis have no chance. They're in the middle of the ocean. And the yogis, the same thing. They aspire from mystic powers or whatever. But they're still based on the false ego. I'm a powerful yogi. I'm liberated. Look at me. You know, that's not going to... The false ego is still there. So they're saying here, even though they strive, very strong waves of material desire ultimately overcome their heart. Therefore, what's the conclusion of Sanat Kumara, who's, you know, wisdom personified, Bhaja Vasudeva, worship Vasudeva, worship Krishna. So that's the other way. In other words, the standard here, you see, Lord Chaitanya's movement, it's based on vairagya. You can't get away from it. And it's not so much renunciation, although that's, you know, one understanding. Detachment. It means dispassion. It's characterized by that. We may do so many things in our devotional life, but if we're not cultivating that dispassion, that distaste for material things, we're not really going anywhere. The famous story of the wedding party. You heard the wedding party? You've heard. So once there was a wedding party, and the bride and groom were going on a honeymoon somewhere up the river, you know, in the wedding. So they got into the boat in the evening after the reception, and they were going to be rowed to their place, their honeymoon spot, a few miles up the river. And they, you know, they'll sleep in the boat, and then they'll get to the honeymoon spot. So they got in the boat, and the rowman, you know, the boatman started rowing, and, you know, they went to sleep. They get up in the morning. What happened? We're in the same spot. And the anchor wasn't pulled up. Rowing, but they weren't going anywhere. So that anchor is our material desires. We may have so many spiritual practices, but if you're not making the effort, you know, with four rags and things, to get rid of the material desires, then you're really not making any progress. So the ultimate position of the real pure devotee is anya abhilashita shunyam. Shunya means completely devoid of any other desire. The word asha is here also. Anya abhilashita shunyam. And here he gives a little summary. Jnana, karma, adi. Adi means etc. So the two is the, you know, jnana means desire for liberation or material knowledge. And karma means any material desire you may have. Not covered. Those things tend to cover. It's like they cover the heart. The heart has to be cleansed. Or in this case, you know, the Sringadeva come and rip those desires. But somehow or other, those things have to be destroyed. And here, they cover the pure devotion that's actually in the heart, deep in the heart. And that's on the negative side. On the positive side, anukulyena krishna anushilanam. So anukulyena means favorable for Krishna's pleasure. Because after all, Aranyakashipu, he was really, really Krishna conscious or God conscious when he was fighting the Sringadeva. When you're being threatened by someone, you know, in your life, you're very conscious of that person. But it was unfavorable. So we don't consider his meditation or absorption bhakti. Although we know in a larger sense he was Jai. It turns out he was Jai of the Jai and Vijay pair. I think there's one translation like that. Ultimately, he's a devotee. There's a certain pastime going on here. But in his identity as Aranyakashipu, he didn't know that. Right? It wasn't like he was playing at being with him. He was really in that demonic mentality. So we have to consciously act favorably for Krishna's pleasure. Krishna anushilanam. This is called bhakti, bhakti uttama. And right near the beginning of the nectar of devotion or the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And a corresponding verse is Sarva Upadi Vinayamuktam Tatpuratvena Nirmalam Rishikena Rishikesha Sevinam Bhakti Ruchite. So here's this idea of upadis, this false identification. In other words, there's two things going on. We cultivate this knowledge, right? And then you have to act on it. If you cultivate the knowledge, don't act on it. After a while, acknowledge you can't cultivate it anymore. It just doesn't mean anything. But if you cultivate it and then you act on it, then it goes deep and becomes pure nectar, you know. So sarva upadi vinayamukta means liberated from all the false designations. So we understand. Oh, I'm not actually, you know, a 50-year-old American woman or whatever it may be. You know, I'm not actually anything having to do with this body. And that's why you change your look, you change your name ultimately with initiation. You're reborn in a different identity. Real identity. What is it, which is like your sarup. What Chaitanya says. Jivera sarupoi?
Krishnara
nityadas. Krishnara nityadas, thank you. The real sarup or identity of every living entity, every one of us, is to be an eternal servant of Krishna. Well, how do we get from here to there? Because now we may understand it theoretically, but there's so much latent conditioning that it requires a process to really come to that point of having no other understanding of who I am or no other motive or desire to act in a way other than as a devotee of Krishna. And that's the process of devotional service. So this is describing the pure platform, being free of all other designations. This word upadi is interesting. This is like something that we impose on ourselves. Just like Kunti says, Maya Jabanikachanam, that the living entity, we kind of pull down the curtain of Maya. We don't want to see Krishna. We don't want to remember him, life after life, because it will impinge on our enjoying spirit. The whole idea is that we want to pretend to be independent and enjoyers. So it's kind of, we put on a mask or a whole costume, and then we try to identify as that, and we forget who we really are underneath. So this is, but the pure platform is being free, sarva upadi vinayam tat paratvena nirmalam, completely purified, nirmalam, no impurity. And then what do you do in that consciousness? Rishikena rishikesha sevanam. So it's a very nice, you know, there's a lot of depth to this meaning. The name for Krishna given here is called Rishikesha. It means the Lord of the senses, of our senses. He's the master of our senses. So serving the master of the senses with the senses. Rishikena, Rishikesha Sevanam, Bhakta Ruchite. So that's, the process of devotional service. But along the way, you know, we need all the help we can get. And Lord Nrisimhadev can help us. You know, we pray to him. And many devotees, you know, when they feel threatened, either externally or internally, meaning like ghosts or, you know, bad dreams or whatever, you take shelter of Lord Nrisimhadev. I know many devotees who have memorized this Nrisimha Kavacha. A Kavacha in our, you know, Kavacha simply means armor. But we have these mantric armors. Now, the Hare Krishna mantra itself is a mantric armor. You know, protects us from so many ills and evils of this world. So you're fully protected there, but still, devotees like, you know, variety. So we have this Nrisimha Kavacha, which I can give you if you're interested in learning it. There's also the Narayan Kavacha right here in the Bhagavatam. And this mantric armor, it protected Indra. Indra could not be conquered because of that mantric armor, the Narayan Kavacha. Couldn't be killed. Even though he was swallowed up by Vajrasura, he still didn't die. He cut his way out with his thunderbolt, which was invincible. A lot of interesting stuff. So a lot of devotees, they take the string of coverture, they get it printed up and they put it on a little amulet, you know, around their arm or around the neck. Always have it with you. You know, these are perfectly bona fide things. You can write the name on your body, you know, and as protection, you know. So this is a very nice day to remember the protection of Lord Nrisimhadev. I remember when we started singing the Nrisimhadev prayers. We didn't always sing. This movement developed, you know. Back in, I think it was 73, soon after I joined, there was an attack on New Vrindavan. It's a long story, but it was pretty scary. these bikers came riding up the hill, and devotees, they hadn't, you know, they were just relying on Krishna. There was no weapons, nothing. They were just in the temple room. And these guys came up, they had shotguns. And one of the guys, his daughter, not daughter, sister, I think, he thought she was joining or something. Anyway, they were you know, pointing the guns at the devotees. And one devotee got shot. Nobody got killed, but he was injured. And so they saw the curtains. They came into the temple, and the curtains had closed. You know, and the devotees were sitting there. And they started singing the Sringa prayers, and they told them to shut up, and the devotees were afraid. They stopped singing. And so one devotee tried to grab the gun and went off, and his arm was injured. And then they took Kirtananda out. They were going to take him up the hill, and they threatened to kill him. He was the leader of the community, you know. And meanwhile, they saw these curtains, and they were very smart, and they said, "We'll open the curtains." They saw the deities there. And they said, "Okay, now, you know, at gunpoint," they said, "now you take that Radharani and you break her." And they did it. But so they dropped Radharani, and the leader of the gang was taking Kirtananda up the hill, supposedly to kill him. And he heard that crack. He cracked, you know. And he got scared. He must have been, maybe he was on uppers or something, but he was very nervous. And he got freaked out, and he told all the guys, "Let's go, we got to get out of here." He thought there was some attack of, you know, somebody else had some guns or something, whatever it was. And they left. And so in this way, you know, they understood Radharani saved the devotees. They say she saved the situation. She'd been repaired. It's the same Radharani who was there now on the altar. So after that, there was a great movement in the whole movement. Oh, we have to train up some kshatriyas, we have to have some devotees with guns, all this and that. But mostly what Prabhupada said, he said, "Oh, we have to chant these Nisringa prayers after every arti." And so that's when it started. For praying for the safety of the movement and for the safety of the spiritual master. Nisringa prayers are chanted. So that's some of the lore. You know, how this God came to be what we know today. Any questions or comments? Yes, Ru.
So you were talking about how Rani Kashyapu was a devotee who was in a demonic mentality.
Yes.
So what does this say about about us, because we were also once devotees, and like, what does this say about our relationship with like Maya? Like, has it actually changed us at all, or is it just, I don't know, it's kind of hard to explain, but
you're trying to identify with that old pastime. I mean, you know the pastime, Jai and Vijay?
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Some may not remember. Alright, so in what way are we like Jai and Vijay? So just for those who may not have read the third canto and other cantos as described. One time, the four Kumaras. Now, the four Kumaras were the first sons of Brahma. And, you know, Brahma, when he had these sons, they were mind-born sons. They came out of his mind. And he had one idea, populate the universe. He had, you know, that was his idea. That it's his responsibility. We got all these planets, we have to... So, but they didn't want any part of it. They didn't want to get married. They didn't want to, you know, have children. They knew they would get, lose their transcendental position, whatever. So they kept themselves by this mystic power as looking like six-year-old children. That's why they're called Kumaras. But they're really the oldest beings in the universe beside Brahma. And they're full of wisdom. You know, they have all this knowledge. So Brahma became angry at that, that they're defying him. And then Shiva came out. Rudra from between the eyebrows, you know. Anyway, it goes on like that. But so the Kumaras, they go anywhere they want. They appear places just like they came into Maharishpitu's sacrificial arena and then instructed him, you know, you worship them like that. They go all over. So they wanted to go to Vaikuntha. But you have to understand, the Kumaras at that time were more or less Brahmavadis. They weren't Mayavadis, but they preferred the impersonal liberation, you know, understanding. They recognized Vishnu, but they were impersonalists to some degree. So anyway, they go through all these gates, and then they get to the last gate to get into Vaikuntha, and Jai and Vijay, who were gatekeepers, they were devotees. Their duty was to keep the gate, and they stopped them from going in, because they weren't pure Vaishnavas. They were, and the proof was that they became furious at Jai and Vijay. You know, and they cursed them. They cursed them to go down and become demons. And there was this commotion at the gate, and Vishnu comes, you know, he comes walking to the gate. What's the commotion? And as he walked, the breeze is blowing the fragrance of his lotus feet, which are, you know, decked with these tulsi mantras. Have you ever, you know, you have these tulsi mantras, they have a distinct fragrance. You know? So just when that fragrance of the lotus feet of the Lord with the tulsi entered the nostrils of the Kumaras, they underwent a change. They became bhaktas at that point. It's a distinct tusyadabindanayan about that happening. Very important. And then, you see, they're one of the examples of impersonalists who became devotees and never looked back. In other words, Shukadeva Goswami is another main one, you know. At that level, you don't give up the higher. You don't give up the higher for the lower. You know, you're completely in control of your senses. So they anyway, they became devotees, and then they lamented. You know, they'd already cursed Jai and Vijay to go down and become demons. And Lord Vishnu, he encouraged them and said, "No, this is all part of my plan." You know, because you can see everything that happened with Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, and Ravana Kumbhakarna, they were the next pair. You know, they're also rebirth, Jaya Vijaya. And then even in Krishna Lila, you have Dantavakra and Shishupal. Yeah, they're Jaya Vijaya. So each of them are like demons, you know, but they're underneath their devotees, and then they go back. Sometimes they say Jagai Madai also. But anyway, so Prabhupada, they're a special case. You know, they're a special case. And also, we understand that Krishna sometimes sends his intimate devotees from the spiritual world to help us. You know, they're nitya siddhas, but they're sent in order to preach. But we weren't like that. You know, we weren't cursed to come down here for some special reason. We turned away from Krishna's service and were covered over in that way. Now, our devotion is still there. This devotion is there eternally. That's our natural state. But it's been covered for so long, it seems like eternal. That's why it's an anadi karma. Anadi karma pale. It means that for so long we've been in this karmic mood, this fruitive mood, you know. How can we get out of it? Because it's an accretion. You know, there's so much piled on, you know, the heart. So many eons of being in this material world. It takes an extremely powerful process to purify that. But since Krishna is all powerful, he can do that, you know, by the means of the holy name and so forth. So, yes, we also can become out-and-out demons. All the demons, you know, all of the insects, all of the living entities, they're all devotees. Jivera Swarupoya, they're jiva souls. Their nature, their original surup is Krishna Das. But the consciousness is so far covered, you know, in the animals and the insects and the plants, you know, that there's no hope, really, of them reviving, you know, except some special benediction. But they come through gradually to the human form of life. This is the stage when it's most uncovered on this planet. And this is even better than the heavenly planets, especially in this age. Because on the heavenly planets, it's too nice. Too nice. There's no urgency. You know? And why should I be renounced? I'm enjoying like crazy here. I got the young body, so many thousands of years, all facility for enjoyment. You know? So we need a situation that's not too bad, and hell is no good either. Too much suffering, you're freaked out. You can't start devotional service there. But this is just right. You know? There's plenty of pain here, but there's also some chance, you know, for a devotional service. And so this is the world, you know, where we have a shot to uncover it and develop it. But we shouldn't, you know, dilly-dally and try to come back, because these conditions, you know, may not be repeated so nicely. We know there's 10,000 years, but for our personally, there's so much horror in this world. Who wants a chance of
I was asking. I was asked this question earlier about Avatar, the Avatar science, and how avatars come every so often. I was explaining the yugas, and I was asked that: is it possible for us to change the course of history? Like, for instance, you know, Kali Yuga is destined to degrade more and more and more until basically Kalki comes and kills everyone, practically speaking. So is it possible to, like, not go down that path, though, to actually change society? And
well, we can do it, but we can help Lord Chaitanya do it. This is a special Kali Yuga, and therefore there's a 10,000-year blip in this Kali Yuga when Lord Chaitanya's movement will prevail. We're at the beginning of that. He was just 500 years ago, so it's 9,500 years. Now, you know, and that's so that this movement will become more and more influential. You know, and we can see it. I mean, this is the history of the last 40 years that I've been, you know, involved in this movement. All along the way, it seems to be a long shot. You know, you could easily see how the movement could have dissolved, you know, after Prabhupada's disappearance. And historically, it almost did. You know, it almost didn't get out of India. I mean, what happened to the Gaudiya Math? You know, you have the powerful preacher like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, expands like anything. You know, but then when he disappeared, it practically became impotent. You know, they couldn't do anything. But Prabhupada was there, and he came out. You know, and then against all odds, you know, the movement started and spread, and so, and then you know, that's up and down history. But it's certain. You know, my own perspective is that it's the chanting. The chanting of the holy name is spreading one way or another. You know, it may not be pure chanting in all places. We know that. You know, there's plenty of chanting going on and people are chanting for the wrong reasons. But they're chanting. You know, they're chanting. And because of that, and it's becoming very popular. You know, even in all places. People don't even know why. But Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtana. Lord Jesus said, Vijayate, totally victorious will be the Sankirtan of the holy names. You know, you may not see it now, but it's going to be victorious. So you can see that, but it does require, you know, that the purity be maintained. And that's why the movement is so important. Because the chanting alone, we see, you know, historically, you have whole groups chanting, you know, the Sahajiyas, but they're not maintaining any principles. There's no Shastra, there's no philosophy. You know, there has to be both sides. You have to have the understanding also, so that you can purify the chanting. You can eventually chant offenselessly. Otherwise, as I said in the verse, you can go chanting for many thousands of births. If you maintain those offenses, you're not going to get love of God. So, you know, the Kali Yuga, yes, does progress, but there's a little blip in it, and we're in the middle of that now, so it's very hopeful. Yes, go ahead.
If I'm not wrong, and most of your points are still very valid, but what Tim's referring to is, okay, 10,000 years, sweet, you know, that's the nectar, hopefully we'll get out of here before it's over even, but why not 20,000 years, why not 50,000, you know, if I was catching this point, it's like, can we extend what's already like a pretty sweet blip, like you said?
Well, you know, that's up to higher powers than us. We have these predictions in the Shastra, and we have to take it at face value. Just like the schedule. It's true that Krishna can come whenever he wants. He can come whenever he wants. But he keeps to the schedule. You know? And we have to understand that that Krishna himself won't be back for another day of Brahma, 8 billion years or something. And then he'll come again. You know? Now, also, and I was just thinking about this today, it's fascinating, you know, this whole idea of the parallel universes, you know, how the atheists say, oh, there's no God, you know, everything is just by chance, and we say, well, that's such a long shot, you know, is that practically impossible? Well, yeah, but if there's infinite number of universes, you know, that it could happen, and this is the one that had happened, and therefore we can think about it, that's why we have consciousness. You know, that's their argument. But so I think, well, wait a minute, we also believe in parallel universes. But it's not that, you know, there's no God, there's parallel universes, and in every universe, there's Krishna. There's the hand of God at every moment, you know what I mean? But it is parallel. And therefore, there are other universes where, you know, Krishna is appearing. So who knows? I mean, we're not restricted to this universe. The living entity is beyond. So, as far as we individually can go, we can go anywhere. You know, in fact, it's said that in the Krishna book, that when, you get ready to go back to Godhead, you don't go directly back. You rather appear in the universe where Krishna is just taking birth and you go up contemporaneous with him. And then you get trained up more. Your final train-up in your actual role in Krishna's Leela. And then you go back to your local Vrindavan. It's right there in the Krishna. Interesting. Yeah, the pastimes are... Right now, Krishna is taking birth in some universe. You know? And right now, he's having a rasa dance. Right now, he's killing Trinabharata in some other universe. Just like the sun, right? Right now, the sun is rising somewhere. It's dawn. And it's always dawn somewhere on the earth, isn't it? So Krishna's Leela are always going on in the material world. But the material world is not always manifest at a certain point. It's completely withdrawn. And the pastime just continue in Goloka permanently. Any other discussion? Yes, Prabhu.
We have a look. So when Rani Kashyapu is trying to kill Prahlad Maharaj, she tried using like snakes and poison and all those different things, fire. But Prahlad Maharaj always said, "Oh, yeah, how can I be killed by fire? It's my father's mouth. How can I be killed by snakes? They're my father's bed. How can I be killed by poison? They're my uncle." So what can we learn about our relationship with the material energy from that? Is it that Prahlad Maharaj wasn't killed by those things because he understood their relationship with Vishnu? Or was it that Vishnu was protecting him from being killed and his remembrance of those relationships was just, it was a separate thing?
There's two things going on. One is that, it's just like a child feels secure, holding the hand of his parent, He's just a little tight, 4 years old or something, And without the father, you feel completely in danger, but you have your father. So he's holding on, to Krishna, who's all-powerful, and feeling completely secure that way. On the other side, there's this the understanding. And that's what you're talking about, see the reality of all these things. Is that there's nothing separate from Krishna, And really, it's a surrender, like you find in Ambarish, the same thing. Right, when Durvasa tried to kill him by creating this Kritya, which is this demoness, fiery demoness, to go burn him up. So he was just surrendered to it. He didn't budge. Well, if this is Krishna's will, then this is Krishna's will. I'm not the body anyway, then let him take me back, So that understanding, the whole idea is that the fear isn't there. The fear isn't there. I mean, it's not that devotees never get killed in accidents. We've had that happen. But the question is, what is the consciousness at that moment of death when that happens? Are they seeing this as, Krishna welcoming them back to the spiritual world? Okay, you don't have to live anymore in this world, come on back, That's a joyous welcoming party, So that's a similar thing. Prahlad, he had a role to play. He's this great Prahlad. He wanted him, Krishna wanted him to rule the world, So therefore, he couldn't be killed. He wasn't going to be killed. If Krishna wants to protect you, no one can kill you. If Krishna wants to kill you, no one can protect you. It's a famous saying, So I think for ourselves, we should cultivate that. Now, one of the statements, and we'll end here, of Prahlad, if I can remember this verse, is Etavan. You remember I'm getting into the Etavan verses? Etavan evalokesmin punksak. Nikshaya Sodiha Bhakti Yogo Ekanta Bhakti Govinde Yatsarvatra Tadikshana. I may have missed the first part, but it's the basic idea. That in this world the highest dharma for everybody is one pointed devotion unto Govinda, by which one sees the Lord everywhere. So if you're always absorbed in thought of Krishna and you understand that he's present everywhere through his energies, then everything you see will simply remind you of Krishna. You'll think of Krishna, And there won't be any fear. Because you feel protected. You feel, you know, like that old song, he's got the whole world in his hand. You know, you feel you're in the hand. You know, like that. So, you know, Narayana Purak Save Nakutashana Bibbitiswagamavaganadakeshu Abitulyarta Darshanam. Narayana Purak, those who are Narayana Purak, completely surrendered to Narayana. Nakutashana, they're not afraid of anything. Nakutashana Bibbitiswagamavaganadakeshu Swagapavaganadakeshu. Whether in Swaga, heavenly planets, in liberation, or in hell, Abitulyarta Darshanam, they see everything equally as simply the abode of the Lord. Nice platform to be on. All glories to Shiva.